Okay, so thanks for the invitation to speak. So Ed told me it's traditional to talk about something about what's going to happen in one of the programs for the next year. And the program, as Ed said, from January to June next year is dynamics and transport. And transport in random in disordered systems. So I wanted to talk a little bit about things that are going to happen in the program, and I thought, well, what better way to talk about that than just to talk about what I do? So it definitely, what I'm going to talk about fits in very well, and I think it's exciting because there's been some progress recently, and so the program next year should be at a very exciting moment in the things I'm going to talk about. Now, of course, what I'm going to talk about is only a small part of the program. So let me just start by mentioning some models, type of problems that we're interested in, which fit into this picture. So here's a model. This model is called ballistic aggregation. So in ballistic aggregation, what you have is a integer lattice. So zero. Oh. One, two. And at every one of these integers, there's a little tower of particles, a little tower of blocks. So maybe there's 3 at -2, 4 at -1. 2 at 0. They're supposed to be blocks, but I'm not drawing them very well. So you get the idea, right? Okay. And what's happening in this model is that blocks are falling from the sky at random. So in a little interval of time, a little block might fall here, a little block might fall here. Okay. And the blocks build up this height of blocks higher and higher and higher. Okay. So they're following technically as a Poisson process everywhere, independently at every site. But there's one little twist to the rule. The block, if this block falls, it's sort of falling from the sky, and it'll just make a new block there. Okay? So that's what would happen if the block fell there. But if this block falls, it doesn't fall all the way down and stick here, because that's such a thing you can analyze very, very easily. It sticks here. It sticks to the closest site on the sides or on the bottom, wherever it's going to touch. So when that block falls, suddenly this tower, which is not drawn so well, becomes that high. Okay? So this is the type of nonlinear random problem which is very, very hard to study. Okay. And the reason you're interested in studying stuff like this is because nowadays they want to build materials by essentially spraying stuff onto atoms onto a surface. And the way these atoms actually collect up is things like that. Okay? So that's how you would make ready-to-go materials, which is one of the big pursuits of material science right now. So this model I showed you is actually very, very poorly understood. One of the great things that maybe come out of next year is if we could understand that model. But we're going to understand some models which are similar. Okay, so now let me tell you another model. Okay. So I'm going to start now in a completely different model. Oh, and the type of question you're supposed to ask, sorry, I didn't say it, is, well, there's obviously lots of questions. What does this surface look like after a long time? Okay. It looks like some random surface, and there'll be fluctuations of the surface. The surface will be a random thing. You want to know how wide are these fluctuations. That's the basic problem I'm interested in. Okay. So here's another problem, maybe not at all apparent why it's similar at the beginning. It's called the directed random polymer. Okay. So in the directed random polymer, well, there's a lot of math here. First of all, you start with a bunch of independent identically distributed random variables. So these are at every site in a two-dimensional lattice, called the sites may be called ij. You have a thing called wij, and they're just put down independently, and that's the random background for this process to be in. And then you're going to send through that random field of independent w's this thing called xi. And xi is just a random walk. So let me draw a picture of this one. Okay, so you've got a two-dimensional lattice. It's, you hear the sights. They look like this. And I comma j just means the ith one over and the jth one up. Okay, so here's ij, or well, this one would be 3, 3. Okay, and there's a number there called wij. Maybe that number is 5, maybe it's 16, something like that. They're all independent from each other, and we send through a random walk. A random walk just means a path which looks like this. And as it goes along, it collects the wij's along the path. That's that sum of wij's. And it looks at how much wij there is along that path. And then what we do, we have a parameter here, beta, called the inverse temperature. And we add the energy is this beta, well, sorry, the energy is this sum of w's along the path. And then you weight all the paths according to beta times the energy. Okay? The more energetic paths should have less weight. Okay? So it's looking for the path that contributes to those things is the one with very, very small or very negative w along the path, okay? So the world path sort of looks along and says, well, it wasn't so bad along where I went. Maybe it's that path. Would have much, much more negative w than the others, okay? X depends on I. So yeah. So this I, sorry. It's just a tech. I'm not such a good letter in tech. This is I, which you should think of as time. Yeah? Okay? And J is the height, and this is the J. So and here's X I comma X I. Yeah. So this is called the directed polymer. Okay? So what it does is it gives more weights to paths xi, which actually run through and collect the negative w, okay? Depending on what your distribution of random variables is. It shouldn't, the things I'm talking about shouldn't matter too much about the exact distribution of the random variables. Okay, and now to study this thing, so this is just a... Yeah, random walk just means it can go to adjacent. Okay, and that's just you can just fix that rule, or you could study something else. Okay, I'm just trying to be precise about a model. There's tons of models. Okay, so, and 0 comma x means that they're all starting at 0 and they're all going to x. So wherever x is, here's x. Okay, so they started all at 0 here, and they all went to x. Okay, that's another not, you can decide what you want to do. Okay, that's called the point-to-point polymer, because it goes from 0 to x. Okay, and now I'm going to take an expectation, which just means an average over all these paths and take the log. Why am I doing that? That's because statistical physicists have learned that this object, the free energy, gives them lots of information about this object, and it's one of the things we can study. Of course, you'd like to study other things, like just, you know, which paths xi are the ones which end up having most mass underneath this measure. Okay, so that's called the directed random polymer. Now the main reason to study this model is because the predictions from physics are extremely interesting, what's supposed to happen. So this thing F diff, that means the discrete free energy, the free energy of the discrete random polymer. Okay, this is called discrete, I'll show you why. Okay, so at N, it's supposed to behave like a sort of universal constant times N, a non-universal constant times N, something which is not terribly interesting here. And then, with some other constant, which don't worry about that too much, N to the 1/3. 1/3, why? This is the big mystery. And not only 1/3, but with the random fluctuations, which are supposed to have some universal distribution. Okay? And this distribution is the so-called GUE Tracy Whittam distribution from random matrix theory. Okay? It's called F sub GUE. So this just says the probability distribution of the Y's is given by this GUE Tracy Whittam distribution. The Tracy Whittam distribution can be described a couple of ways. It's the rescaled distribution of the principal eigenvalue of a randomly chosen matrix from the GUE distribution, which I won't go into right now. But it can be described other ways. It actually has a distribution which is the second integral of the square of the solution of the Pamlivay II equation. So there's a connection to inverse scattering theory here and completely integrable systems. And it also can be described as a Fredholm determinant of a certain thing called the area kernel. So there's multiple descriptions of this Tracy-Wyndham distribution. And the amazing thing about the Tracy-Wyndham distribution, which was only discovered about 20 years ago, is that it keeps coming up in all sorts of different models. And that it comes up here is a surprise. It was not expected, and it's not explained at all. So everything that's written here, prediction, this is extremely loose prediction based on almost nothing, based on a few vague theoretical arguments and one or two exact models which are like this, and people believe they behave the same, which I'll try to explain. So one model which is like this, where it's known, and so actually, in fact, the Tracy-Wyndham prediction is complete generalization from one special model, which is the case beta equals infinity. Now, beta equals infinity doesn't quite make sense upstairs. What it means is you only care about the path with the least W, okay? And that's a model called last passage percolation. Okay, so in that special case, and even more special, the W's have to have a special distribution. So there's one special case. It can actually be computed, and you can check this prediction there. So the entire prediction is based on this one calculation. This n to the one-third, on the other hand, has been known for a long time. So that was the n to the one-third was discovered by physicists in the 70s and 80s using a method they have called renormalization group. Okay. Okay, so why is this interesting? Well, there's two things that are going on here which are very interesting. One is we have a very strong coupling of the two different types of probabilities. So there's two probabilities going on here. One is the XIs, the random walks, which are in red, and the other is the background randomness, the W, which I wrote in blue. So these are actually two different sources of randomness, and they're coupling very, very strongly with each other and somehow producing this very, very strange behavior. Okay? And the other thing that's interesting is that the predictions here are supposed to be universal over a very broad class of models, and that class, for reasons which you'll see, is called the KPZ universality class. Okay, but everything I'm saying, this universality is very one-dimensional thing. So you'll see that. Okay. Now there's another regime. So first of all, this model could be defined in any dimension. The only difference with the dimension, you would have a time, and the J variable could take values in a d-dimensional space, a d-dimensional lattice. Okay? That would be the only difference. And you would have exactly the same model, just with more, you'd need more random variables to describe it. Okay. So, in higher dimensions, there's a phase transition. There's a beta naught such that below that beta naught, there's not enough beta to couple these things strongly enough, and it's actually weakly coupled. Okay, so this is true in three or more dimensions that this beta naught is strictly positive. And then you have different behavior. You don't have this strange n to the one-third behavior, and you don't have this strange Tracy-Wyndham's. You have more classical behavior, Gaussian behavior, random walk behavior. With the random walk behavior would have different, you know, powers of n like we're used to, like n to the one-half. Okay. But in one and two dimensions, you can't get away from it. This beta naught is zero, and the thing is strongly coupled. Okay, so there's been very little progress on these problems. Okay. So now I'm going to tell you another model. So this is a model of the model I just wrote. Okay, and this is the continuum version of the random polymer. And actually, most of the physicists just write down this model anyway. They never really talked about the discrete case. So in the continuum case, what we have is just continuum versions of all the objects I just wrote down. We have a, you know what? I can still use the laser pointer. Maybe. Okay, so we have the continuum version of the background independent random variables, and that's called the space-time white noise. So WS SX is the space-time white noise, which you should just think of independent randomness everywhere, and it's Gaussian. Instead of the random walk paths, we have Brownian motion paths, because random walks are supposed to be Brownian motions on a large scale. So we have Brownian motion paths, which are going from 0 to x. Instead of the sum, we have an integral. And then I take this expectation and I take a log. Okay, Brownian motion paths going from 0 to x are called the Brownian bridge, because it makes a bridge. Okay, so this is the exact analog of what I read before, and I call this thing the free energy of the continuum random polymer. Okay, now you're all staring at these two little colons, saying, oh boy, there's a little problem here. So, and there is a little problem. The problem is that if you the white noise in continuous space is an extremely irregular object, because it's not a function even. Because if you take a random variable and then take an independent random variable right beside it at another point, the thing's too irregular to be like a function. The values of WTX for different T's and X are completely uncorrelated. Okay? So it's a distribution. Now, sometimes distributions you can integrate paths going through them, and sometimes you can't. And you can check here and you can't. It's illegal. So this object here actually doesn't make sense point-wise. And it certainly doesn't make sense enough to take E to it. But you can get rid of that problem by a little bit of renormalization again, where you subtract a very well-defined object and then take a limit and see that everything's okay, and that's called the Wick-ordered exponential. Okay, so this is a well-defined object, and it is the honest-to-goodness continuum analog of what I wrote before, and everything makes sense. And for that, you just have to believe me. Okay. So, in particular, just to convince you for 1 second that it makes sense, I can write it as a series of things which do make sense. Okay. So for the experts, this is an actual definition of what's upstairs. And this thing actually makes sense. It is a series of what are called multiple Wiener integrals, and the thing makes absolute honest-to-goodness sense. Okay, so that's almost everyone should just ignore that, except to say there is a way to make sense of this thing, and it is the natural continuum analog. P's are the n-step transition probabilities for the Brownian bridge. Okay. And you can prove this series converges in a very nice sense, and there's no problem. In fact, what this thing is actually the solution of a certain stochastic partial differential equation, and that's just the heat equation. So this dTz equals a half dx squared z. That's just the plain old vanilla heat equation, but it's being forced by this white noise. Okay, so it's got a potential coming from this white noise. And then if you solve this equation, which it turns out is one of the very few stochastic partial differential equations which makes perfect sense, it's an absolutely well-defined SPDE, then you can just define F in terms of it by this little formula. Okay. So at any rate, this thing does make sense, and it is the natural continuum analog of the thing written before. Now, in fact, by some small transformation, this can be turned into some of the models which we're really interested in. One of those models is this thing called KPZ. That's the Carter-Parisi-Zhang equation. So this KPZ is a continuum model which is supposed to model the height in this ballistic aggregation model, and let me just explain that. Okay, so h is a real variable which is the height at h of t and x is the height at time t at position x. And it's supposed to evolve according to basically the heat equation plus some white noise and plus this the heat equation is here, plus the white noise plus some nonlinear term, which I'll describe right now. Okay. So what happens is that you can think of what's going on here. Let me draw it in blue or green. Okay. So now you're supposed to think of a big picture of this thing. What's the thing look like on a big scale? Now, of course, the big scale is actually not going to look like that at all. It's going to look so. Maybe I should have written it like this, but let's not worry about that too much. Okay. So you're thinking of this on a big scale, and this height is called h of t and x. So here's x and at time t. Okay. Here's h t x. Now you're supposed to think of the way this surface is evolving as consisting of several different things. One is a relaxation like the heat equation. The other is this nonlinear term, which is supposed to encompass all the nonlinear things which I described before. The fact that this jump, okay, basically what happens is this guy jumps to the maximum of its neighbors and itself, plus one. Okay? So there's some nonlinear function there, and say, don't worry about what nonlinear function. Every nonlinear function is quadratic. So that nonlinear effect is given by this dxh squared. Okay? And you can certainly see one thing, which is the most important thing, which is that the amount that matters is definitely going to depend on the global angle. So if you had something like that, you would have more differences of tower heights. And so the rate that that funny nonlinear thing was changing thing would matter more than if you were in a place where the global height was flat. Okay? So the main effect is supposed to come in here. And then the white noise just corresponds to stuff raining down independently at different sites at different times. Okay, so that's called the Carter-Friis-Zang equation. And it's supposed to be a sort of generic equation which covers all random growth models in one dimension. Okay? The derivative of that, just taking a formal derivative, is this thing called the Stochastic-Berger's equation, which is supposed to be a one-dimensional model for turbulence. So these equations were known before and studied by physicists. Everything below here is a complete physical formality. These equations do not make sense. Nobody knows how to make sense of them, and many people have tried. Okay. The reason they don't make sense is because what's supposed to happen in this equation, and what you can check formally, is that Brownian motion is supposed to be invariant. But if you take a Brownian motion, then this term here, you can hardly see it, dx squared, this guy, is absolutely ill-defined at every single point, because Brownian motion is not a differentiable function. Okay, so let me just show you a little picture, a little movie, of what this thing is supposed to look like. Okay, so here's a picture of KBZ running. Now, it's not the greatest movie. This shows how computationally great I am. But this is what it should look like. So what you see is this Brownian motion, okay? And you sort of have random jittery stuff locally, okay? If you waited long enough, it would actually change the global structure, but you won't see that in the time that I was able to compute before the thing crashed. Yeah, then it stopped. So all you can see here is that sort of locally it's fluctuating around. Yeah. Yeah. I also don't worry about that too much. There's all those things, but you won't see them in the computation level of this movie anyway. Okay, but that just gives you an idea of what we're looking at. So what should happen is in this KPZ that if you start with a Brownian motion, you'll have a Brownian motion for all time, and it should do basically what you're seeing. Okay. Let me show you another thing, just to try to convince you that. Yeah, that's a good question. Nobody knows. I can tell you what I think happens. It'll have a sort of nice smooth evolution of that smooth thing, on top of which will be a Brownian motion appearing. Okay. Yeah, the thing is going to look locally like a Brownian motion immediately. Okay, so there's no little time in which this is going to make sense or something like that. This is not going to make sense ever, and there's not going to be some local existence theorem where it makes sense for some little time. It's just nothing like that. It'll just immediately look like a Brownian motion. The equation ceases to make sense, and that's the story. Okay, but now actually, the situation is not as bad as all that. You can just define everything below here through these transformations I set. So we can just define h equals minus log z, where this makes perfect sense, and u equals dxh, where h makes sense from this, and they're going to have the properties we want. Yeah? If you start with a smooth guy, after a long time, what you'll see is a Brownian motion. But first, you'll have to take a long time to lose that smooth guy. So first, it'll look locally like a Brownian version of the smooth guy, and then after a long time. If you start with other things, it won't be exactly like that. So, and we'll get into that in a second. But all of this is quite conjectural, right? Okay, let me show you where this thing comes up, because there's been a beautiful recent experiment done recently. Okay, can you see that? Okay, so this is a thing called liquid crystal turbulence. So this experiment was done around December or something. Okay, so what you're seeing, this is a liquid crystal. Okay, and the liquid crystal has two states, and it sort of flips. It like guys like to be in the state that their neighbors are in, but they can also flip to the other state. And the two states here are, of course, this black and this sort of grayish state. And also in the liquid crystal, there's this local turbulence which actually acts really genuinely like a white noise. Okay, so this is a way they could test this thing. And what they do is they fire a laser beam here. This is actual laser beam. So here's my laser beam. Starting the thing, and this little thing spreads out. Here it is spreading out, and there are the time pictures of that. And this boundary here is supposed to be this KPC. Okay, and they actually test in this experiment. There's many tests which I won't show you the pictures, testing that it has the universal behavior I described on the first slide. Okay. Let's go back. Okay. So the idea is, although mathematically one can't make sense yet of these equations, one can simply define them through these formulas. Formally, they satisfy these equations. It really is illegal to do these transformations. It would be very interesting to know how one can make sense of it. But anyway, this does make sense, and therefore you can define U and H and start studying them, and that's what we're going to do. No, these liquid crystals. It's not crystals, first of all. So liquid crystals look a lot like, you're thinking of, you should think of the Glauber dynamics for the easing model, and starting with a boundary and having that grow into, with a, forcing that into another region, and then it'll grow like that. So the boundary will look like. Well, there's no, in the liquid crystals, there's no guys falling from the sky. Yes, exactly. But it's sort of an internal mechanism in the boundary. But this equation is supposed to govern lots of things, not just things like that. Yeah. Okay. It's sort of anything which grows where the growth is done by randomness independently at different sites plus some nonlinearity is supposed to be governed by this KPZ. So it's an extremely general thing. Okay. Okay, now, so I should mention that there's different natural regimes for this problem. I described the point-to-point polymer, but actually for KPZ, as we just talked about, there's a different sort of natural regime, which is this equilibrium state where you start with a Brownian motion. And it's not too clear what this would mean in the KPZ sense. It's not too clear, you know. They're sort of different regimes, and actually the picture I showed you, it really depends on how you start. So when you fired the laser beam in there, it's actually going to pick a certain regime, and the universal distributions of the Y from the first slide will actually depend on what regime you're in. Okay, that's something that we know now and can prove in a couple of cases. Okay. So now let me just describe to you what we want to show. So we've defined the continuum random polymer. Okay, and then through this little transformation, we can say that that's a solution of KPZ. Through this transformation, we can say that the U is a solution of the stochastic Burgers equation. And then there's all sorts of physics conjectures you can now translate into this language. So, for example, one wants to show that the continuum random polymer has this scaling, which we just suggested. Oh, sorry, this N is a typo. It should be a T. But the main thing, there's a sort of, again, a non-universal term here, and then some non-universal constant. But the important thing is this T to the 1/3 times a random variable Y, which in the case of the point-to-point, we'll have this Tracy-Whittam distribution, and in other cases, we'll have some other distributions. Or you could ask questions about stochastic burgers, which are also extremely interesting, which is, if you looked at the space-time correlation functions of the U, the solution of stochastic burgers in equilibrium, now of course it's terribly unclear whether this object makes sense, but actually we can prove this makes sense. What we can't prove is that it looks like this. So you should think of this as some generalization of the heat equation. The heat equation, you would have x t to the minus 1/2, and a minus 1/2 here, and this phi is this function e to the minus x squared, or e to the minus x squared over 2, depending on your scaling. And here, this phi is an actual function which is known. It's an extremely complicated function. And what's not known is why that function comes up, or how to prove such a scaling or anything. And I mean, all this stuff is basically mostly from simulations. There's a few theoretical physics arguments, and mostly it's extrapolation from one or two exactly solvable models. Okay, so now I want to talk about some of our results. So I'm going to talk about this point-to-point polymer. So this is the free energy again of the point-to-point. So it's going, the paths xt are going from 0 to x in time t, and I'm running them through this white noise, and I didn't write down the Wick order, but that's implied. And I take a log, and that's this free energy. Okay. So if you just recalling the definition of this is that this z is satisfying the stochastic heat equation. And you can check that the initial condition for the stochastic heat equation corresponding to the point-to-point is actually just starting with a delta function. So it's sort of the simplest possible initial conditions for this partial differential equation, and that turns into this this free energy just with this simple transformation. Okay. So the amazing thing is that there's an exact formula for the distribution function of FTX. Okay, so the free energy of this continuum random polymer, the probability of the one-point function, so if you fix t and x and calculate the probability distribution of this random variable, it's exactly computable. And that was discovered in February by Giddy, who's here, and Ivan Corwin and me, and also completely independently by Sasamono and Spahn. And I'll try to explain how we did that. Okay. I can't write down the formula until I explain to you how we did it, because the formula is not simple. The point is that there's a formula. Okay. So the formula is, and because of the formula, by the way, once you have a formula and you're able to start proving things, that means that we'll be able to start making progress on one-dimensional polymers. Okay. The reason there's a formula is all based on a very special discretization of the KPZ equation called ASAP. It stands for Asymmetric Simple Exclusion Process. I'll describe this process to you. So it's another guy like this ballistic aggregation, but a very well-defined guy, and for some reasons which aren't completely clear, you can compute an enormous number of things about this model called ASAP. Okay. So in ASAP, particles are on the integer lattice, and they're jumping as random walks to the left and to the right, and they jump to the left at rate q and to the right at rate p, and the important thing is that q is not equal to p. That's the asymmetric part. Simple is just a word which says they only jump to the one step to the left or the right, and exclusion is going to come in a second. Okay. Exclusion is that if a particle tries to jump on top of another particle, you just say, no, you're not allowed to jump, start your clock again. That's called the exclusion rule. So that's the entire process. All these particles are attempting to do these asymmetric random walks, and when they try to jump on top of somebody else, they're not allowed to. So it means you have a very, very simple state space. You either have a particle at a site or no particle at that site. Okay. So you can define from this a height function, which I'll call the discrete h, as opposed to the h from KPZ, obviously. And the steps of the discrete h are just steps up if there's a particle at x, and steps down if there's no particle at x. And I'll just draw you guys a picture to make it clear. Okay, so here there's some particles on the integer lattice here. Some places have particles and some places don't, right? And wherever there's a particle, I go up in the height function, up, up. And here there's three places with no particles, so I go down, 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 up, up, down. Okay, I think everybody gets the idea, right? Okay, and then the particles are going to do little jumps. They jump to the right at rate p and to the left at rate q. So the guy jumped. Now you see, when the guy jumps, that changes the up-down thing, right? So the height function does this little jump. Okay, so here they are, and they sort of jump around. And you can see the particles jumping corresponds to the things jumping up and down. Okay, so is everyone's clear with the height function now? Okay, so next. Okay, one of the nice things about this model is that the product measures, which just means if you flip a coin and put a particle at a site, if it comes up heads, and put no particle at the site if it comes up tails, and do that independently at every site, okay? That'll, and then you run the process for a while, you'll see exactly the same thing. That's an amazing property of this process. There's many amazing properties of this process. And that's the discrete analog of saying that Brownian motion is invariant for the KBZ, is that random walks, which are the integrals of these plus or minus ones, are invariant for this height function. And you could even see it in the previous slide, okay. Did anyone see that random walks are invariant? There's a random walk, and it'll just stay a random walk at all times, okay? Okay. Okay. There's a very special case, which is called the totally asymmetric simple exclusion process, where you don't allow any jumps to the left, or to the right, doesn't matter. But they all go one way. This is even more exact solvable things. In fact, the model can be essentially solved by determinants. Okay. And here, there's an exact map to this last passage percolation model. And that's how Johansson was able to get the one special case which you can extrapolate from. Yeah. Why do we put Q and P? They're not equal. Why not equal? Okay. So it turns out that if Q is equal to P, the model is sort of trivial. Okay? If Q is equal to 0 and P equals 1, it's non-trivial, but it's special. But if Q and P are both not equal, then you can approximate KPZ. Okay? So KPZ is obtained from this model, as I'll just show you in a second, by rescaling the model with Q very close to P. Okay. So here it is. Okay. So this is called the weakly asymmetric simple exclusion. That just means you take Q very close to P and then look at a very, very long time. So the difference between Q and P has to be this epsilon to the 1/2, which is the scaling parameter. You look at this enormous time, epsilon to the minus 2, on a lattice of size length epsilon. And that's actually the thing which I was computing when I showed you the KPZ. Then this thing will approximate KPZ in this sense. Now, we don't know what KPZ is, right? The KPZ is an ill-defined equation, but we define KPZ to be minus the log of the stochastic heat equation. So in the sense that if you take e to the this guy and subtract an appropriate constant, it has to be very well chosen, it's enormous, then that will converge to the solution of the stochastic heat equation. And that was discovered in some cases by Bertini and Giacomini in 95. Okay. So that's what we're going to use. Okay. Okay. So the exact formula for the distribution function for the point-to-point polymer, or KBZ in a certain sense, is going to come from an exact formula for the asymmetric exclusion process in a very special case. And this very special case is what's called the corner growth model. So I'll just describe that now. So the corner growth model is just the special initial conditions for the asymmetric exclusion process that I just described. And the very special conditions, I'm sorry, particles are called x here, is that all the particles start to the right of the origin and all empty to the left of the origin. Okay? So you just start with this, and we're going to get something from that. So let's just see. What happens just a sec. Okay. So you start like that. And remember, the height function goes up wherever there's a particle, so now it goes up all the way here, and so it's just a corner, right? And then the particles start jumping, and the corner starts growing. And that's why it's called the corner growth model. Okay? Someone see that? Okay. So that's what we're doing. Now, you can already see sort of that this, even in such a picture, that there's going to be a sort of parabola shape here. What will happen is that the equations we're doing are fluctuations around that parabola. back. Okay. Now, notice another thing, which is that the height function, if you want to know if the height function is somewhere at some time, that can be related to where the particle that started at position m is at time t. So m is just this position, and if you want to know where this particle is at time t, you just track the particle, then you can just translate that into data about the height function. You don't have to worry about exactly how, but you can imagine. If you knew where all the particles are, then you can tell how high the height function is. Okay. So the amazing thing, sorry, I have to go through that. So a couple of years ago, Tracy and Whittam discovered an exact formula for this position of the mth particle at time t. It has to be suitably rescaled. So the exact formula for the probability that this particle is less than or equal to x, given by these complex integrals. Okay, so let me just take a second to describe this formula. It's an absolutely amazing formula. And the formula is unbelievably complicated. Again, the point is that there's a formula, not that you don't expect simple formulas. So what goes into this formula is, first of all, there's one contour integral over a contour called S, which is slightly smaller than a unit disk. And then you've got these d mu integrals, and you've got this infinite product. Just all this stuff. And then there's this Fredholm determinant. Okay. The Fredholm determinant is a determinant of an operator which has a kernel operating on a circle slightly bigger than the unit circle. And that operator consists of a bunch of things. So the bunch of things are an exponential term, which has this funny function of these things, and then some strange function inside. I don't know how else to describe it. It's a bunch of functions and it's a strange formula. What's in this formula? A bunch of contour integrals, a Fredholm determinant of an operator operating on a bunch of contours, and some very strange sort of number theoretic functions. You could ask a simple question like, why on earth? This is supposed to be a probability of something. How do I know that this number is between 0 and 1? Well, it turns out to be true. It's extremely not obvious. It's extremely not obvious that it's a real number. Okay. But it's true. It's amazing. The formula comes from a special type of beta ansatz for the asymmetric exclusion process, and then a miracle that for these special initial conditions, the formula becomes unbelievably simpler than it started out to be. This is the simple formula. The formula before this is much, much more complicated. Okay. And what do you do with such formulas? Well, remember that we can actually get a formula for the height function because the height functions of the asymmetric exclusion process with the p scaled close to the q actually converge to the thing we call KPZ. So all you have to do is take a limit of this formula. Okay. So if you scale things properly, the discrete height functions are converging to the solution of the stochastic heat equation. The log of this z is the thing we call KPZ. So we'll be able to get a formula for KPZ by taking a limit of the probability distribution of this. Okay. So you have to take a limit of the formula on the previous page when m is chosen carefully so that you get all these numbers. And that turns out to be the following problem. So there's your m. And you have these complex integrals, and you just have to take a limit, that's all. Okay, so it's just that nobody in the world is supposed to follow what I'm saying. The point is that there's something computable, because one has exact complex formulas, and one can attempt to start taking a limit. You know what you're supposed to take. All you have to do is plug it in and start computing, and the answer, if you can actually do the asymptotics, will be the formula for the height distribution of the KPZ equation. Okay, so it just turns into an extremely complicated problem in complex analysis, calculus problem. And this is done by what's called the steepest descent method of steepest descent. It's method of steepest descent because if you see this exponentials, you'll know that you should attempt steepest descent on such things. And Tracy Whittam, in fact, did steepest descent on their formula, too. So it's sort of following what they're doing. Okay. The key point is that this function, when you look at the saddle points in the steepest descent analysis, this function is cubic. And the cubic aspect of those functions is what leads to all the threes in everything. And in particular, to the Airy functions in the formula for the Tracy Whittam formula. Okay. And now there's a new twist in the type of asymptotes we're doing here, which is, well, this is technical, is that this function f is extremely complicated and has poles becoming dense around the saddle point, and at the same time, the mu integral also has poles which are becoming dense. So everything, all the poles are becoming dense at the same time, so it's very hard to extract the asymptotics. But it can be done, and the two groups did it, and so here's the formula. Okay, so here's the formula. So that's the continuum random polymer, and the probability distribution, there's a funny factor, T over 4 factorial, which one should pull out, is actually given by this following thing. So I'll straight it all out. Okay, so it's just a horrendous formula. It's a Gumbel transformation of some Fredholm determinants and traces of objects which come from them. The kernel of this operator is explicit. It's given by a horrible formula. This function here, although it looks complicated, is actually just a little function which goes like this. It goes to 1 at infinity and 0 to minus infinity smoothly. And then there's this extra term, which comes from a Hilbert transform. It's a very, very complicated formula. But one shouldn't look at all the details of the formula unless you're trying to compute something out of it. The main point is there's a formula, and you can do things with it. What could you do with it? Well, for example, you can prove the scaling conjecture. So the distribution, just as it's supposed to, converges to the GUE Tracy Whittam distribution as T goes to infinity. So this proves the scaling conjecture I wrote on the first page. The free energy is some constant which has been pulled out, but the end of it is this T over 4 factorial plus T to the 1/3 times the Tracy Whittam distribution, just as conjectured. Okay. As time goes to zero, you can actually compute it also, and you get a Gaussian. So these distributions actually interpolate between the Gaussian for small time and this Tracy Whittam distribution for long time, the one that I said at the beginning, and that's why they're called these crossover distributions. Okay. It's funny because there were a lot of physics papers getting formulas recently, which were all wrong, but what they did manage to do, interestingly enough, is go back after the fact and re-derive the formula using their computations. So they sort of realized their mistake afterwards, and they can get the two different derivations of the same formula using physics methods, extremely non-rigorous methods, but they get the same formula. They're wrong. They would sort of do things and they would say, let's neglect these terms. And here's the final formula. And then it turns out you couldn't neglect those terms because from the way they were approaching things, it's very hard to see the forest through the trees. We had a very different angle. And so in some sense, we would never have such a thing. We would think, let's neglect it. Our formula is right, yeah, sure. No, they just reproved our formula. Once they saw our formula, they go, oh, God. And they went back and said, okay, you can't neglect those terms. And suddenly these papers started appearing on the archives. You know, we can use the method of strings to derive the formula. Yes. Okay, so let's clarify a little bit. The T to the 1/3 was predicted by physicists. The Tracy Whittam distribution was predicted by Johansson in 2000. There was no previous prediction by physicists of any Tracy Whittam distributions. They didn't even know what the Tracy Whittam distribution was. before 92 anyway. So t to the 1/3. They weren't so specific as you think. They didn't. They said there will be anomalous fluctuations, and they graph it or something with certain skewness or something. They couldn't make such precise predictions. Now, then the reason that the earlier formulas could easily be checked to be wrong is because they didn't look Tracy Whittem-like. So you could sort of see they were wrong even when they started coming out. Okay. Which one? This one or the... this one I'll maybe come back to in a sec. Yeah. Oh, maybe I should hurry up and come back. So this one I pointed out because it's very interesting that we can't do that problem. So we can do a lot of models now, but what we can't do is this one, and I'm hoping that during the program we'll be able to attack this problem. And the reason we can't do this problem is because this problem is special. Well, not special. It doesn't have one of the special properties that a lot of these other models do, which is that we don't know its invariant distributions. So remember I said you could, in the asymmetric exclusion, you could just flip a coin and put a particle at every site according to the coin, and then you would see that later. The analog of this is, in this case, is not known at all. And that's why we don't know even how to do rescaling on this model. So this model still remains a big mystery, even though, of course, everyone believes it's in the KPZ universality class and that such things should be true. Okay. Maybe I have a few more slides, but I'll stop for questions now. I think it's a good time.